From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. We started things off with a new one from Dash Berlin. That was Callisto featuring my guest, Shogun. Andrew Chen has been flying all over the world, heading from destination to destination, sharing his high-powered brand of trance. He's got a ton of singles, remixes, and collaborations in the works, and we're going to hear all about them on today's episode, so stay with us. The Unce Challenge 3 is wrapping up tonight. 100 amateur producers are competing to tour the festival circuit this summer. The winners of the challenge will be playing sets at Summer Camp, Wakarusa, Sonic Bloom, and Electric Forest Festival. Make sure you head over to theunce.com/theuncechallenge3, that's 3 in Roman numerals, III, to cast your vote by midnight PST. Alright, let's get to the interview with Shogun. You're going to be in New York this weekend, but then you'll be headed to Poland next month, then down to Argentina for Ultra Music Festival South America, then back up to Canada. It's not like you're not in the same city, state, or country for too long. It's that you're not even on the same continent for more than a week. How are you holding up?
Well, you know, it's a bit tiring, but you know, to be honest, like when I get to these places, you know, when I finally see the energy of the crowd and get to meet like the friendly faces and people that are as passionate as you are about trance music, you know, that's what gives me the energy to keep going. So, I mean, yeah, the flights, they are tiring, you know, jet lag gets kind of bad sometimes, but holding up wise, I'm still doing pretty good, you know? Yeah, I think it's just like the crowd, me and the people, it really just keeps on pushing me, so that's what drives me, man.
Have you noticed in all of your travels that the audiences are different in different cities? Or maybe because of the internet now, the good stuff always rises to the top and everybody everywhere knows all the songs and wants to hear mostly the same tunes?
Yeah, well, I think the internet plays a key role in it because, you know, like music-wise, it's really, you know, if you have a track that people love and there's like YouTube, you know, there's so many different sites that it's just, the exposure is so fast that people, you know, they look forward to hearing these songs when you show up. And like, for example, if I drop Skyfire, I mean, that's a really big track that I play, which people go just absolutely crazy for. And so it doesn't really matter, you know, which city or which continent, the reaction's almost the same for everywhere that I've been to. But I mean, as far as the crowd wise, I mean, it is a little bit different. Like, for example, I was playing in Argentina earlier this year, and you know, just people, it was kind of like a soccer crowd there, you know, which was a bit different from let's say the crowd at Beyond Wonderland, like for my set at ASAP 550 LA. I mean, both places, you know, they went crazy, but it's they do different stuff. Like, for example, Argentina, they're pretty interesting. Like, when I play Skyfire, everyone kind of just kneels down, and then right when the climax hits, when the beat comes back, then everyone like jumps up. So that's something special that, you know, I've never seen before, that I guess only, you know, in Argentina they do that. So it's interesting to see, you know, the different crowd reactions. But mostly, you know, like the big tracks, they want to hear your big tunes. And so that's like a common bond that people worldwide have, which is very cool.
I've never heard of that. That's incredible. That's like organized soccer chants in East Asia, and you know, everybody doing the same thing and holding up the same signs. I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah, exactly. It was insane because actually the promoter told me right before I went out, he's like, hey, you know, when you play your track Skyfire, right when before the, you know, the big synth comes in, right after when Melissa, you know, speaks her vocals, just tell everyone to go down, and then everyone just like goes down, kneels down, sits down on the floor, whatever, and they actually wait till the big synth comes, and then they just jump up and just go absolutely mental, you know. So it's like, it's something I've never seen before, and when I got to experience it, when I was in Mar del Plata near Buenos Aires. It was really amazing. It was really, really cool.
I can imagine. I'm glad you mentioned Skyfire. We're going to circle back around that in a minute, but I'd like to go back to the beginning if we could. First, did you actually grow up in the States?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Newark, Ohio, so in the Midwest. And then moved to live in Taipei for a bit. And but now I'm based in Irvine, which is in Orange County, about like 45 minutes away from LA. So I've been living here since 2004, 2005, almost 7, 8 years now.
But you do maintain strong ties to Taiwan, correct?
Right, well, you know, my grandparents are still living in Taipei, in Taiwan, and I still have family there. And, you know, like, both my parents are Taiwanese, so I am Taiwanese, but I was born and raised here in America and pretty much lived here all my life. And but, yeah, I do have a lot of family back in Taiwan still.
Do you identify as Taiwanese, like, truly, or is it more that you can go there and speak the language and really connect to the audiences, but you feel almost like a visitor? I wonder how that is for you, being first generation.
I think it's both. I think I kind of see myself more as just an American because, you know, when I was growing up, I went to high school, college here, everything. So I was born and raised here in the States. So, you know, that's pretty much my main culture, I guess, if you say that. It's just like kind of like the American way of thinking, the American way of when I was growing up. But, you know, when I went back to Taiwan the first time, you know, I wasn't really sure what to expect. You know, when I was doing the residency at Ministry of Sound, that was actually only my second time going back. So it was kind of like, I won't say like a culture shock, but it was something really different that I never really experienced before. It's like, oh, okay, so these are the people, you know, these are my people, kind of, because my parents are still Taiwanese, and you know, I can relate to them because I can, you know, I can speak Taiwanese, the local language there. And I actually don't know any Mandarin, which is pretty interesting. So when I go back to Taiwan, people are like, hey, you know, like all the younger kids, they're like, hey, you know, let's talking to me in Mandarin. I'm like, hey, I don't understand any Mandarin. You gotta talk the local language, you know, with me. That's how I communicate with them. But yeah, I kind of definitely see myself more as just an American. But, you know, when I go back to Taiwan, it feels like a second home. You know, it's like, can I have so many friends and family there that it's always nice to show up in Taipei and spend some time there, get some good food, and just enjoy it, man. It's a second home to me.
Sure. What's the scene like there?
Well, in the scene in Taiwan and all of Asia, it's pretty crazy. Like they're really strong, really passionate about trance music. I mean, I've been to different places, and you know, it really pops off in Taipei. Like I just had a gig there with Avicii just over the weekend. And it was pretty much like a sold out show. I think about 9,000-10,000 people all packed into one venue, and they're just raging hard. So, I mean, the Taiwanese people definitely love their trance. And I think all of Asia, they, you know, Asian people really love trance music. So that's definitely a great thing. It you know, it works for me too, because, you know, like I said, like I'm American, but then I have Asian roots. And so, like, there's an extra bond there, especially when I'm playing in Asia, you know, so that's definitely awesome.
We'll be right back. Skyfire from Shogun.
So how does a kid in Ohio even come across trance music? You don't really associate Newark, Ohio with trance.
You know, it was actually when I was in high school, I think industrial music was catching on and it was getting pretty popular. Like, I remember Nine Snails, they had a big hit, Closer. And like, you know, there's bands like Filter, some stuff like Chemical Brothers. You know, there was a little bit of electronic movement actually, like being played on the radio, only for a little bit before it kind of died down. And then I caught hold of these tracks, caught hold of these songs on the radio, and I was like, wow, this is something different than they're playing from other tunes at that time, you know? It was a little bit different. They had like these electronic elements, like Prodigy, for example, a little bit of breakbeat and a little bit harder, darker stuff.
Sure.
And that's what I liked, you know? That's what caught my attention. But then I always thought, hey, you know what, how come people only focus just on like electronic elements? They don't, there's no type of music that has like the beautiful melodies behind it, you know? And then I found out about Gorilla, I found out about Armin's Communication, you know, like these such classic tracks with like beautiful melodies. And that really, like, you know, once I just heard about those, they really just changed my life. And that's how I kind of like just migrated from the harder industrial music into trance music, because I was like kind of craving for that beautiful melodies that drove these, you know, really epic tracks. And trance was it, you know? It's like, man, once I found trance, it's like, oh, this is what I've been looking for all the time. So that's how I got into it, man.
So, you know, mid-90s, mid to late 90s, you're listening to Trent Reznor and The Prodigy and Chemical Brothers, and then you move into trance. At this point, are you even thinking about DJing? Are you thinking about production? From what angle do you think, you know, I got to get a piece of this?
Yeah, I definitely started as a DJ first, but I actually started scratching. Like, you know, the first time I got these Newmark turntables, I remember, I think they were like $200 a pop or something, like $200 a piece. And you know, I bought this DJ Qbert video. It's a VHS called Invisible Scratch Pickles, you know.
Absolutely. Very, yeah, legendary.
Like, exactly. And then I was like, wow, this is some really sick stuff. You know, he's just going crazy on a fader, going crazy on turntable, doing his crazy scratches. And then I want to learn. That's how I got interested in turntables and DJing. So I started out scratching like this. And it wasn't until, you know, I started going to these like clubs, these parties where, you know, Armin would play at, Oakenfold, Tiesto, Paul Van Dyke, when I was like, wow, this is something to a different level. It's not about scratching. It's about playing on a good set, you know? Like, you know, these tracks, these DJs, they play all these like amazing tracks and people go crazy for them. You know, this is real trance. And, you know, real trance, you don't have to go, you don't have to dance throughout the whole night. You know, you can kind of like feel the music. There's breakdowns where there's no beats at all. And people are just like, wow, like, you know, it takes you to cloud nine. It can take you to heaven, pretty much. This feeling, this epic feeling that gives you goosebumps. And then that's how I kind of transitioned into from just being like a, you know, DJ, like scratching, like doing turntables and stuff like that, into mixing. I was like, yeah, I definitely want to start mixing and, you know, play tracks and give people like such a great feeling that I was having on the dance floor. So basically, you know, that's how I kind of transitioned. And I started as a DJ, and then you know, a few years, I'd say about 4 or 5 years later, I started, you know, thinking, oh well, instead of just DJing other people's songs, why not, I want to DJ my own songs too. So then that's how I got into producing. And then I moved to West Hollywood and studied producing at SAE, the Audio Engineering School, and graduated with a degree and everything, and then just focused on producing. So now it's, you know, it's a bit of a combination, DJing and producing, and I love them both dearly.
How do you grab the attention of an Armin van Buuren or his label Armada? I mean, a million people are trying to do just that, but you succeeded. What's the secret? I mean, it couldn't be all, you know, Qbert or SAE. There's got to be some sort of X factor in there.
Well, the secret is, I mean, I know it sounds pretty cliche, what people say, to never give up, but that's the secret, is to never give up. You know, have an idea, have a goal of what you want, and work your ass off to get it, no matter what it is. You know, like a lot of people, they ask me, what, for example, like what software do you use? What kind of equipment do you use? Yeah, that, you know, that's kind of important. But what's most important is, like, if you want to learn it, you want to master it. Doesn't matter about the software. You know, you pick one, master it, and just go all at it. And then master it until you can create, like, these awesome, you know, the big tracks that you want to create, that you envision. So basically, I think what grabbed attention of Armin was I just kept, you know, just pounding out tracks. And not every, you know, not every track was, you know, like, caught his attention. But eventually, you know, if you pound out enough tracks, you make enough tunes, you know, people are going to start paying attention to you. So, I mean, I still have over, you know, like 200, 300 tracks in my Logic folder that are just sitting there, you know, that I felt maybe wasn't good enough or something. So it wasn't like, you know, I just make one track and all of a sudden, yeah, you know, people love it. It's just like, it's kind of a learning process. There's a really deep learning curve for as far as productions. But then if you just keep making the music, keep sending it to the labels that, you know, you want to be signed under, and eventually they're going to catch on and be like, hey, you know, this guy, he's been sending us so many tracks. Okay, let's take a listen to it. And then if they like it, then that's, you know, that's your foot in the door. And you just keep making music and hope that, you know, people love it. And it might, you know, when I first started, it wasn't just, I wasn't thinking, okay, you know, I just want to, I mean, of course, Armin's a big inspiration of mine. You know, he's one of my idols, you know, but I wasn't thinking, yeah, I want to make this track just for Armin. You know, I was thinking, I want to make this track, you know, for myself, most importantly, you know, that I love. And then hopefully people will love it too. You know, it's like if the people love it, if other DJs support it, if the label loves it, and if Armin loves it, that's like the icing on the cake. That makes it, you know, so much more amazing. But if you don't love it yourself, then why make the tracks, you know? So,
sure.
Yeah, so that's what happened for me.
Shogun remix of Emma Hewitt's Make You Paradise.
You mentioned it earlier. There's no question that Skyfire was monumental. When you've had such an amazing hit, is going back into the studio a challenge? Do you feel like you're trying to make lightning strike twice? Or now that you have such a huge and dedicated following, do you feel like you can relax and create and that the pressure is off to an extent?
I don't really see it as pressure. Like, no, I do get a lot of people who say, hey, how are you going to top Skyfire? And I don't know. I think it's, you know, something like that. It's almost, it's too hard to do because you create, like, when I created Skyfire, it was, there's a purpose behind it. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on at the time in the world that was, like, you know, a lot of bad stuff, a lot of, like, dark sides of humanity, you know, it's like, there's wars going on.
So that's a whole big inspiration behind Skyfire. You know, I want to do something to kind of show people, hey, let's step back for a second and just be kind to each other, you know? Like, there's already so much going on in the world, but it's just, like, you know, just realize that, hey, we're all humans, and we all make mistakes and stuff. But hope for, like, a better place. You know, there's always good things that can happen. There's always, like, hope and peace, and then we can make it happen. That's the whole thing with Skyfire. But to the question, you know, it is pretty hard to, there is a bit of a pressure to kind of, like, top such a big track like that. But then, you know, I was sitting there, I was like, instead of topping it, why not just do, you know, what I want to do. Like, just do something that makes me happy. You know, that puts a smile on my face, because at the end of it, you know, if just like when the original question or one of the earlier questions when we were talking about getting attention from Armin, mm-hmm. and then I was saying something like yeah, well, it's just like, you know, a matter of the tracks that I do, you know, if it makes me happy, that's the most important thing, and you know, so that was the whole idea I had. Instead of topping Skyfire, it's like, why not make just not attract that fact that, you know, makes me happy. And at the end of the day, if, you know, if I'm listening to the song and I got a smile on my face, then damn, you know, that's awesome enough. And hopefully people will catch on and be like, oh yeah, this is a great track. And, you know, they won't see it as, oh, so you're topping Skyfire, you're going to top this track and that track. But if people appreciate it, you know, I think in a way that's like kind of like topping, you know, like one of my previous tracks. It's like, okay, you know, maybe they see it as, yeah, it's not as good. I think it's even better than the track that I did before. But as long as, you know, it gets people dancing and I've got a smile on my face, and I think I did a good job on it. That's the most important thing for me.
Sure. Emma Hewitt, who lends her voice to all sorts of huge dance numbers, has been nothing short of raving about you for a while now. Tell me a bit about your relationship.
Yeah, well, Emma is a really great friend of mine. You know, she's such a sweetheart, and she has such an amazing voice. Like, I mean, out of everyone that I've worked with, she's definitely one of my favorites, and you know, I've always been such a big fan of her. You know, all her songs, like, she has such a beautiful tone that, you know, when you hear the track, you know exactly. You know within, like, the first 2 seconds is the Emma Hewitt track, because, you know, that's her, how powerful and how distinguishable, you know, her voice is. So we, I played a gig with her a while ago in Canada and in Edmonton, and that's the first time I actually met her in person. And we started talking, and started getting, like, a really good friendly relationship, and then saw each other again in Argentina. And then we actually had, like, a 5-6 hour layover and before flying back to the States. I think she had to go to New York. I had to go back to LA. So we're just chilling at the lounge and then just, you know, going through some ideas and stuff. And, you know, she talks and we started talking about doing a track together. So that's how it kind of, like, evolved. And then, you know, I got a email from her, you know, she said, hey, check out this one, check out my new single, Miss You Paradise. You know, see if you want to remix it. I listened to it. I was blown away. I was like, yeah, of course I want to remix it. This is amazing. So I took on that remix, and it's been about, I think, 3 weeks, almost a month or something. And, you know, I sent it back to her, and she was like, wow, this is, you know, she really loved it. So it's been such a, I don't know, positive thing. This is a great vibe working with her and knowing her, just, you know, as a good friend. And yeah, so but I don't think this remix is gonna be a last one. I don't wanna give any secrets or anything, but there might be another one on the way, like an original production, which I'm really excited about. But yeah, as far as a vocalist, as far as a friend, you know, she's amazing. Amazing, really amazing person.
That's fantastic. And finally, before I let you go, you've got a couple of huge tracks coming out on Dash Berlin's new album. I bet that's nothing short of an absolute thrill.
Yeah, definitely. It's called a Callisto, big collaboration with me and Dash, and it's interesting because, you know, he loves the big vocal progressive anthems, just like I do. You know, I really love making vocal, big vocal, you know, progressive trance anthems, and so when we came together, it was like, yeah, you know, why not do something different? So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, both our styles into one track, but in the track, it's not a vocal track. It's actually an instrumental banger. And it's actually called Callisto because, yeah, well, it's the one of the moons of Jupiter. And to me, it's special because, you know, listen to the melody, and if you kind of close your eyes and it's like, okay, picture yourself, you know, what that feeling would be like if, you know, you're on the moon or something. And that's kind of like the melody that we thought of. So it's a really beautiful track, really banging track, and it's a big one, definitely coming out for this album. And I actually got two tracks on this album, like that one, Callisto, and a big mashup, Man of the Skyfire, which is pretty, yeah, it kills the dance floor, so that's a really big one. And I got some other ones coming out soon. My single Amplify, that's an instrumental, along with 550 for the contest that Armin was running for Stage Chess 550 a while ago. So those are going to be released with Dash's Callisto, Man of the Skyfire, and also I got the remixer Emma Hewitt coming out, Misty Paradise, and then a brand new remix I did for Ferry Corsten, which he just dropped on Corsten's Countdown like earlier today. That's I'm really excited about that one. So definitely some good tracks in the way, man.
That's fantastic. That's perfect. That Dash Berlin album coming out at the end of the month, and we'll make sure to see if we can catch up with you on all your dates hopping from country to country. Andrew all Chen, right, cool. Shogun, thanks so much for being on the Uns podcast.
Oh, yeah, anytime. Thank you, man.
Man on the Skyfire from Dash Berlin with Shogun. That's going to do it for today's episode. Special thanks go to Aaron Osovets with Theory X, and of course my guest, Andrew Chen. He's jet-setting around the globe playing tons of shows. Hit up theuns.com/Shogun to keep track of his tour dates. And grab that new Dash Berlin album that came out today, Music is Life, featuring two tracks with Shogun. We've got some free tickets for you. Go to theuns.com/contest for free passes to Freak Nasty, Rusko, Cascade, Ocean Beats featuring Elliot Lip and Samples, and of course, festival passes to Camp Bisco 11, Emissions, Narnia, Starscape, Loaded, and so many more. If you're signed up, you can win in one click. Please visit theuns.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Uns podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theuns.com. That's A-N-A-N-D at theuns.com. Join the conversation at the Uns podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week.